This is a CBC podcast.
Financial firms are raising rents higher than other types of landlords.
Affordable housing in Canada as a precious commodity. Precious to anyone who can find a decent unit, and a commodity to a growing number of private equity firms that are boosting profits by buying up buildings and making rents less affordable.
We're not tasked with building deeply affordable or social housing. Let's draw a line between these two. You do this, government, we do this.
And what they are doing, according to one recent study, is raising rents by 22% over 2 years. Welcome to a holiday Monday edition of Your World Tonight. I'm Susan Bonner. Also on the program, taken for a ride.
I was like, wow, I can't believe that just happened. I was in the car with somebody who wasn't a taxi driver. He withdrew $600.
Taxi scams are costing Canadians millions of dollars, and the latest trick involves a simple product anyone can order online. This won't come as news to anyone who rents a home or apartment. The cost of rent in this country is off the charts, less affordable than Europe, the U.S., even Japan. And it's not just because of inflation. Researchers say it's partly due to professional investment firms buying up available units, then raising the rent. More now from the CBC's chief correspondent, Adrian Arsenault.
This protest might just sound like futility. A renter strike in Toronto, tenants holding back rent because they say they can't afford the persistent hikes. The protests go on, rents still go up, and now some are even facing eviction. One tenant, Halil Alibi, has a preposterously dark thought about this. So sometimes he envies the homeless.
A lot of homeless living at the park and tents. Honestly, I speak to myself, you know, oh, those people are lucky. They don't have pressure to pay the rent.
So an extreme reaction to an extreme problem. Rents in Canada, according to rentals.ca, have gone up 22% in the last 2 years. Of all the G7 countries, when it comes to housing, Canada is the least affordable. Why? Well, researchers like the University of Waterloo's Martine August says some of this has to do with who owns rental units in Canada, financialized landlords in particular. Those are firms like private equity firms with investors that often buy up rental stock, usually more affordable buildings. August says the plan is simply to make these units more profitable.
And found that financial firms are raising rents higher than other types of landlords. And what we found was that on average, after a financial firm acquires a building, they increase the eviction filing rate by 3. They triple it.
Once a tenant is out, rents can soar. Her research suggests those firms own more than 20% of rental stock in Canada, buying up more than 90% of what was for sale in Toronto in 2020. The cost, she argues, is between 2011 and 2021, Canada lost 550,000 affordable housing units.
Where have these gone? The buildings are still there. They're just no longer affordable.
The CEO of an association of real estate and development firms, Michael Brooks, points out nothing about this is illegal, and a lack of affordable housing isn't private enterprise's problem to fix.
We're in business. We're not a social agency. We're not tasked with building deeply affordable or social housing. Let's draw a line between these two. You do this, government, we do this.
Interesting point. It was when the federal government stopped investing in subsidized housing in the 90s that financial landlords started growing their share of properties. And unless something changes, this trend will continue. The more demand there is for housing, the more attractive Canada becomes for investors looking to capitalize. And the harder it is for tenants like Halil Alibi just looking for a place to live. Adrian Arsenault, CBC News, Toronto.
Ride-sharing apps aren't everywhere in Canada, and even where they are common, it sometimes just makes sense to hail a taxi, the old-fashioned way. But beware of an old trick with a new twist. Fake taxi drivers luring victims into their vehicles with the help of a simple product that can be purchased easily and legally. Sophia Harris reports.
I saw a cab up ahead. It did have a taxi sign on the top.
Catherine Cazzotti of Calgary thought she had hailed a real cab. Although she did think it was odd, the driver said she'd have to pay with a debit card. But she was tired, so she hopped in.
I was like, fine, it's kind of weird, but let's go home.
Nothing else seemed off until the next day, when Kazodi discovered that almost $2,000 was missing from her bank account, and her debit card had someone else's name on it. Turns out, the taxi driver was a fraudster. During the debit card transaction, he somehow recorded her PIN, stole her card, and handed her back a similar-looking one.
It really felt like an invasion of privacy and a violation to be a victim of this scam. I was terrified. I was in shock.
It's called the taxi scam, and it has spread to many Canadian cities. Calgary police say they've had 19 reports of the scam in July. Toronto police say over the past year, they've had almost 1,000 reports, totaling close to $2 million in financial losses.
And then I get a weird notice from my bank saying there was suspicious activity.
Jessica Chin King was one of the Toronto victims. Her driver also told her to pay with debit. Then the fraudster secretly switched her card.
He withdrew $600. I was like, wow, I can't believe that just happened. I was in the car with somebody who wasn't a taxi driver. Anything could have happened.
Fraudsters can impersonate cab drivers by buying generic taxi signs online. CBC News bought one on Amazon for $35. The bottom has a magnetic strip, so it easily sticks to a car's roof. An attached electrical cord plugs into an outlet in the car to power the sign's light.
These signs are not consistently being used for the right purposes.
Marc-André Way, president of the Canadian Taxi Association, has asked Amazon to stop selling the product.
And they do have a moral responsibility to at least sell the signs to individuals that are properly licensed by the cities.
But Amazon says it will continue to sell the signs to all customers because it's not breaking any rules.
Anything can be used to commit a crime and you can't start banning everything.
Toronto Police Detective David Coffey says the best way to stop the taxi scam is to spread the word.
Never give another person control of your debit card.
I just try to make sure that it's a legitimate taxi company.
Ching King and Kazodi's banks reimburse the money they lost. Now they too are spreading the word. Sophia Harris, CBC News, Toronto.
The high cost of living is putting pressure on everyone. For parents, it's another burden while raising kids in an already stressful age. This summer, the Surgeon General of the United States called for a fundamental shift in support for parents. Anand Ram explains what's behind that alert and what experts say can be done to help.
I'm putting so much pressure on myself. I don't have the resource or I need more help, but where is it?
Fidelia Cabrera has four children.
And here comes my daughter. Sorry.
Speaking to us at a park near her daughter's school in Ottawa, it's clear she knows the multiple stresses of parenting. And money is just one of them.
School supplies, then there's the indoor-outdoor shoes you have to purchase, then there's also extracurricular activities if you want your child to be in that.
Parents and caregivers in America are under pressure.
Cabrera's family, along with the tens of millions in Canada and the U.S., can relate to the warning from the U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy.
What really struck me as I was doing work on youth mental health was recognizing how many parents were struggling as well.
In an advisory, Murthy lays out the many stressors facing parents and the effect they're having on mental and physical health, from heavier financial strain, greater time demands, to cultural and societal pressures, including one particular source.
We are living in a time where the culture of comparison has become intensified, particularly by social media.
Though far from new, keeping up with the Joneses is now part of the daily doom scroll on social media.
Throw a back-to-school party.
With parents posting what they did for their kids, leaving watchers feeling wanting.
That's the poison. Pure poison.
Julie Romanowski is a parenting coach based in Vancouver. She says it's about time parental stress gets elevated to this level. Her practical advice, echoing the Surgeon General, is that it takes support and not putting it all on one set of shoulders.
I've got my sisters I can talk to, my old neighbor. I can say this to my own parents. Start gathering, like think of a basket, and you're going to start gathering the support system of people who can help you in specific areas.
For Cabrera, another strong recommendation, focus on yourself too.
You need time for yourself as well to just decompress and just relax. Even if it's just reading for 10 minutes, even if it's just going for a walk around the block, it does really help a lot. For me, it does. But realistically, sometimes I don't get it.
In a recent study by the American Psychological Association, U.S. parents were twice as likely as adults without kids to say their stress made them feel numb, overwhelmed, and affected their ability to function. Anand Ram, CBC News, Toronto.
Coming right up, how high-tech apps and new equipment are helping farmers cope with a major labor shortage.
And later, we'll have this story.
It was a pretty good summer at the movie box office in Canada, but not thanks to a flood of Hollywood blockbusters. It's foreign films that are bumping up ticket sales post-pandemic.
The theaters are reacting to the demographic. You know, people come from all over the world over here. And now, increasingly, I think people are actually interested in different types of cinemas.
I'm Eli Glasner in Toronto. Why your local movie multiplex might be looking a lot more multicultural and reaping the rewards. That's later on Your World Tonight.
Canadian farmers have struggled for decades to find enough workers. Currently, the agricultural sector is short nearly 90,000 people. The reason is no mystery. It's hard work with long hours that many humans aren't up for. So Canadian farmers are increasingly staffing those jobs with new technologies. Alexander Silberman reports from Anaheim, Saskatchewan.
Ken Sarauer's hands are off the wheel as he watches his combine drive itself, harvesting barley on his Saskatchewan farm.
I see it as lane assist in your car, right?
Instead of steering, Sarauer is looking at four screens. They tell him how much barley he's cutting. One is measuring moisture levels, and a close-up camera lets him see right down to the kernel.
Everybody worries about automation taking jobs, but I think it allows you to do your job better.
Family farms like Sarauer's are increasingly turning to automation, looking to do more work with fewer people. One reason being Canada's agriculture sector is currently short 87,000 workers. That's why Sarauer invested in a SWAT cam, a high-tech box he attaches to his crop sprayer. It uses artificial intelligence to count plants and weeds.
And then I can see where the problem areas are, and I can go to that area immediately. I don't have to, walk the entire field.
It's something he had to hire an agronomist to analyze.
A lot of the autonomy is replacing, I'd say, tasks that are quite monotonous and, maybe lower skill tasks.
Derek Rood is vice president of research and development with Croptimistic, the Saskatchewan-based company behind the SWAT camp.
We're not totally getting rid of the agronomists. We're wanting them to do the higher skill analysis work.
In some cases, the need for manual labor is being completely replaced. There's software that would, at the tap of a phone, send a self-driving tractor to meet up with the farmer in the field, carting away grain from the harvester. That would allow Sarauer to do the job alone. Darcy Cook is with PTX Trimble, the Winnipeg company behind the autonomous grain cart.
So it's really not replacing jobs, it's just allowing farmers to, if they do have help, to deploy those to more valued operations.
On Sarauer's farm, it's a two-person operation throughout the year, just him and his dad. But during harvest, he relies on his uncles, who are in their 70s. Eventually, technology could let him do all 1,450 hectares himself.
The problem is 90% of the time, I don't need to be in the tractor. Or I could be doing something else.
Small farms like Sarauer's face steep costs for autonomous equipment, but the desperate need for labor could force them to make the shift quicker, to stay profitable and competitive. And within a decade, it's estimated one out of three jobs in agriculture will be automated. Alexander Silberman, CBC News, Anaheim, Saskatchewan.
Technology is at the core of solar and wind farms, and the development of those projects has exploded in recent years. But it can come at the expense of traditional agriculture. The Alberta government was so concerned it put a pause on new renewable energy projects. Now there are experiments being done in that province aimed at helping two kinds of farms coexist on the same piece of land. Kyle Bax reports.
Come on, honey.
Every day, Jana Greer checks in on her animals. About 1,000 sheep spend the summer here at a solar farm east of Calgary. Their job is simple, eat weeds.
Most of them are really high in protein. The sheep enjoy consuming them.
Keeping vegetation down is important, so nothing blocks the blistering sun from reaching the solar panels, numbering more than 100,000 on this site. Greer has been a sheep farmer for 15 years. This summer, she's also testing out some other four-legged animals to see how they graze amid the rows of panels.
Come on, ladies.
They are Cooney Cooney pigs, 8 in total. Sheep are ideal at grazing on solar sites, but Greer is curious how the pigs compare or complement her existing flock.
We can still use this land. I mean, sure, these panels are here 25, 30 years. What are we going to do to improve the soil? How are we going to continue to farm it?
The booming solar industry is creating an opportunity for some farmers to meet the growing demand for weed-chomping crews. Deploying animals reduces the need for chemicals or lawn mowing, which can throw rocks and damage panels. There's also plenty of research underway, including how best to grow crops. Some plants can thrive underneath, as the panels provide some shade, block the wind, and increase soil moisture. Joshua Pierce is leading several research projects at Western University.
The data that's coming out is pretty convincing that you can put in solar the correct way and have no loss in yield. And if you are clever about it, you can actually get a fairly substantial increase in yield.
The rapid growth of large solar and wind projects has created friction in some rural areas, as landscapes change and farmland can disappear. That's one reason why the Alberta government is introducing new rules, including a requirement for agriculture on solar sites in some areas, whether it's grazing animals or growing crops. Some solar developers are embracing the opportunity.
We start thinking about agriculture at our solar projects day one.
Janet Annesley is with Kiwetino Energy.
We want to take the opportunity to potentially enhance that soil and create another revenue stream through be it crops or grazing of animals.
For Greer, there is room to grow her farming business as more solar fields are built.
It's not solar development versus ag. It's coming together to the table to say, how can we both be a benefit and work together?
As for her experiment with pigs, they adapted well to spending the summer at the solar field. Greer now plans to have four times as many next year to help control the weeds. Kyle Bax, CBC News, near Strathmore, Alberta.
Canada has a wild jellyfish problem. In June, PEI saw swarms of large purple stingers clog the harbor in Charlottetown, while much smaller freshwater jellyfish have reached alarming levels in the warm lake waters of British Columbia. As Susanna De Silva reports, they are so invasive, researchers worry the creatures could kill off other aquatic life.
I've been in the midst of thousands.
Thousands of clear, shimmering new additions to the lake Brian Croft has lived beside for 20 years and where he goes snorkeling.
You'll start noticing, well, there's a jellyfish and there's another one and another one. And you realize you're heading towards the center of this mass.
Croft and a group of neighbors have been helping University of British Columbia researchers study the freshwater jellyfish in Hotel Lake after they were spotted there a couple of years ago.
We measured the dissolved oxygen in the water and we go through a whole bunch of series of tests.
Their efforts helped Florian Lusco and his research partner determined the peach bottom jellyfish, also known as freshwater jellyfish, has now been found in BC further north than ever before.
Moving north by the decade, basically, and this could be related to warming trends.
Lusco says scientists believe the jellyfish first came from Asia, likely on the boots of Second World War soldiers in the tiny polyp stage of their life cycle, to begin growing again once they found North American freshwater lakes. The jellies, about the size of a thumbnail, too small to sting humans, have also been found in Ontario and Quebec.
We have ideas that they are probably negatively affecting local ecosystems. But again, this kind of early research statements, it needs to be proven.
It's believed they jump lake to lake attached to boats or the feet and beaks of birds and can reproduce asexually, creating exact clones of themselves. And so far, the ones found in BC, all male. In Ontario, all female. A good thing keeping them in check, scientists say, because if they get together, they can reproduce faster and have a better chance of survival.
You have to have a recombination of genes, and this only happens if you have sexual reproduction. If you don't have this, and you are basically creating copies of yourself, you are not able to adapt to a changing environment.
It's why Nick Wong with BC's Invasive Species Council encourages people to be mindful of what they could be spreading.
Clean, drain, dry. So you clean off all the plants, sand, mud from your watercraft or gear. You drain the water from your boat or your gear on land, and then you dry up any standing water.
Give it to me.
0, 5.
In the meantime, Croft says he hopes he can continue helping scientists.
It feels like we're on the front line of doing something about it.
Keeping tabs on his new neighbors. Susanna De Silva, CBC News, Vancouver.
Some big Hollywood films brought some bigger crowds into theaters this summer. Welcome news for a business still recovering from the pandemic. But increasingly, cinemas are filling seats with non-Hollywood fare, showing foreign films from a long list of different countries. They say it's good business to better reflect Canada today. Eli Glasner has more on how the multiplex is getting more multicultural.
Hi, Peanut. I'm going to need you to come with me right now.
It was a good summer for movie theaters. Deadpool and other familiar franchises had audiences filling theaters again. But what was different were the ones playing next to the superheroes and sequels. Films from India, China, Korea, and more. Cineplex, the country's largest movie chain, says in 2023, 10% of box office revenue came from international programming.
Yeah, I would say we're the largest chain in North America that plays a wide range of international cinema, from Hindi film to Punjabi film to Korean film, Filipino film. I think we play 7 to 9 different language types across the entire country.
As the senior vice president, it's Robert Cousins' job to decide which films run where. Why does this make business sense for you?
Because people come. Ultimately, what makes this line of product work as much or more than any other line we have is that the audiences come out for it.
Cousins points out that in Canada in August, after Deadpool and It Ends With Us, the Hindi horror comedy Stree 2 was close behind as the number 4 film in the country. Last year alone, there were 217 non-English titles.
It is equal to all of the studio and independent distributors combined.
I still haven't seen Deadpool Wolverine, but that is on my list. It's going to be here. But what's lovely is that, you know, you will get to see these smaller films over here.
Arts and Life reporter Aparita Bhandari remembers making the trek from Toronto to the suburbs for her Bollywood fix.
You'd go to Albion or Woodside. That's where you went. And, you know, I still love those theaters. You know, their sticky floors have changed, but they're still nice.
Now the latest international titles are playing at her Midtown Toronto multiplex. Bhandari points to the series Squid Game on Netflix. She says the increased popularity of non-English titles on streaming services is having an effect.
The theaters are reacting to the demographics. People come from all over the world over here. And now increasingly, I think people are actually interested in different types of cinemas, you know? So yeah, I think it makes strong business sense.
And in the lineup for the Hindi language film Veda, you hear the best reasons.
It's a plus for us that we can actually watch in Canada. So I'm really excited for this movie.
Like, we are missing families and all stuff. So these are the things that connect us back.
Stitched together by the international language of cinema. Eli Glasner, CBC News, Toronto.
And that is our program for this holiday edition of Your World Tonight for Monday, October 14th. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm Susan Bonner. Talk to you again.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.